Welcome back to Round the Cauldron, where we talk theology, philosophy, and everyday life as a modern witch. One day, I'm going to come up with a better podcast intro, but today is not that day. In today's episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with J. Allen Cross, author of American Brujeria, a book recently published by Weiser. We talk about the book itself, Jay's practice, and a few things in between. Before we get into the interview, I need to give a special thank you to my patrons who help make this show possible. Thank you to Rose, Jess, Hillary, Lee, Angie, Lelai, Magical Crafting, Bliss, Beverly Butterfly, Jessica, Jennifer, Laura, Chris, and Nad. If you would like to be part of that list and help support the show, feel free to join me over on Patreon and get some other patron-exclusive perks. Now, on to the interview. So thank you so much, Jay, for joining me here on Round the Cauldron to talk about your practice and your new book that you just had come out, which I have already read. I've already finished it. I have it sitting here next to me. American Brujeria, Modern Mexican American Folk Magic. So thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. So why don't we start off with just telling me and everybody else just a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Absolutely. So I am a practicing witch living in my home state of Oregon, which I love dearly. I am kind of multi-ethnic. I am Mexican, Native American, and European, kind of from two very different colored parents that have made me, which really plays into how I work my magic and how I kind of view the magical world as well, as kind of this beautiful blending. And we see that a lot in the book too. But yeah, I spend my time doing magic. I'm a full-time witch, writer, and a paranormal investigator on the side as well. So it's a lot of spooky stuff.
All the spooky stuff. That's the best part. So what inspired you to write this book? Where did that come from?
You know, it pretty much kind of just hit me one day. I had been thinking about writing a book and I wasn't sure what the topic was because I didn't want to just write a book. I wanted to fill in a need. I wanted to kind of help out in some way or another. And so I had been tossing around a few different ideas. I kind of started a different manuscript, but then I wasn't sure really where I wanted to go with it. And then a couple of people had asked me to write a book on brujeria, and I was like, no, like I can't do that because I don't know, you know, real traditional brujeria. I only, you know, do folk magic, which to me at the time was pretty much just, you know, North American folk magic is what I was practicing. And then very shortly after that, I'm sitting at my altar and I'm realizing, I'm like, oh, well, I have all my saints here and my rosary beads and my statue of Guadalupe, and I'm praying in Spanish, and I'm like, oh, you know what? And I'm looking around too at the other people around me who are kind of in my age category, who are also of Mexican descent, and we all have very similar ways of working. And then I realized, I'm like, oh, you know what? We have our own folk magic ourselves as Mexican Americans. And when you ask us or a lot of people what this work is called, people will often say like, oh, this is brujeria. And I thought that that was really interesting and really fascinating that we had our very own kind of special spin on the practice. And so I really wanted to sort of spotlight those of us who are in between, those of us who are both Mexican and American, this kind of liminal bridge people that we are, and really kind of spotlight that as something that's very powerful. And so I realized that there was no other book like this out there. And so I decided that it would be a great idea to go forth with that and really help spotlight my community and kind of connect people back with their culture to the best of my ability.
That's really cool. I really enjoyed it, coming from a completely, the perspective of an outsider as a white woman. I have actually already recommended it to a friend of mine who grew up Catholic, who is looking for more of like the mysticism. Mm-hmm. And the magic within Catholicism. And I was like, this book might be up your alley. You might want to check it out. So I haven't heard back on that yet. but do you want to, maybe for those who don't know the difference, give sort of
like a, not necessarily a definition, but what is the difference between what you do versus traditional brujería?
Absolutely. So traditional, like Mexican brujería that we find, tends to be very dark. And a lot of it is based around making packs with spirits, a lot of times spirits that people would not normally want to work with. Mm-hmm. Or it also requires a lot of things like animal parts or animal cruelty. A lot of brujería is like, you know, get a toad and sew its eyeballs shut while it's still alive and things like that. So it's a very intense form of magic. Mm-hmm. And at the same time too, in Mexico and in these Latin American countries, we don't utilize the term witchcraft as such an umbrella term. In the United States, we use witchcraft as this huge umbrella that encompasses anything spiritual at all, from mm-hmm. actual witchcraft to astrology and tarot. And even nowadays it's herbalism and soap making is also like under the heading of witchcraft for some reason.
That doesn't make sense.
Right. And so a lot of times people go, oh, well, since brujería is the translation of witchcraft, that means that it's Wicca. And I'm like, no, that's not how this works. In Mexico, we don't necessarily umbrella things in that manner. There are specific paths, and brujería is one of them. So it's a little bit like, you know, when people say, oh, like all witches do Wicca, and that's not true. It's the same thing where like all Mexican magic is not brujería. Brujería is a very specific type of magic. There's also other ones like hechicería, there's magia, there's curanderismo, all kinds of things that are different paths of magic. And brujería is just one of them. In the United States, however, what we're really practicing is kind of a mishmash of all of those different paths of magic that have been brought to the United States by immigrants, and then the bits and pieces have been passed down to us as their descendants. Mm-hmm. And so we end up with kind of like this kind of hodgepodge, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, kind of all thrown into the pile, and the most useful parts of it kind of survive. And a lot of it is under the guise of Catholicism. So what we're doing in the United States is more like a form of kind of like folk Catholic, like kind of folk Catholic, folk Catholicism type magic that we're working, which is actually very different from what we would call brujería in a place like Mexico. So I wanted to very clearly define which one I was talking about, which is why I decided to kind of coin the phrase American brujería as a way of describing the specific type of magic that we're doing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's really helpful to have that defining line between the two for someone that has no idea that there would be a difference. Mm-hmm. So, and now this is something that you grew up doing, or did you learn and like reconnect with it?
So I grew up doing a lot of magic. It wasn't something that was necessarily taught in my family, but my family is very magical. It's something that kind of runs in our bloodline. Pretty much all of the cousins in my generation are some sort of a witch or a healer or crystal guru or something or other is happening. So it's a very intense family thing for us. We come from, part of my Native American heritage is that we're Puebloans, specifically from kind of the mystical lines of that group. And so it's something that's just kind of in us. And growing up, you know, I had a mother who would read tarot cards at the dining room table. I remember, you know, candles full of black glass to get rid of an unsavory boss, all kinds of stuff. Even though we didn't necessarily call ourselves witches at that point, at least, it was something that was always sort of around, even if we weren't, you know, specifically practicing something. It was something that we were always kind of had our fingers in. And me, like a lot of people these days, this work sort of just kind of happens. It just kind of finds its way into our hands, especially those of us who are Latinx and looking to kind of reconnect with our roots. We suddenly kind of one day realize, oh, I now own a Guadalupe statue and a rosary and some novena candles, and I'm not sure how they got here, but it kind of just comes to you and finds you a little bit. So that happened to me kind of several years back. And even though I had been kind of practicing several different paths of magic up until then, I really kind of found a home here in this work. And it really deeply impacted the way that I work my magic.
That's really beautiful. And it's hard for me to describe how the way you describe it makes me feel. So as a white person, I know you have addressed this on Instagram, but for anybody that doesn't follow you on Instagram or social media, who is this book for? Because I know you've gotten questions about it. So can you go into a little bit of detail about who you wrote the book for? And who can read it and who can partake?
Absolutely. And I love that distinction because they are very different. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of questions, you know, who's it for versus, you know, who's welcome to be here as well.
Right.
So the book is written for Mexican American people specifically. It's very much aimed at them. The entire introduction chapter I've titled Spanglish for this reason, because it's something that a lot of us can really identify with. And kind of the basis of this magic is understanding our place as liminal people. We are an in-between place, like a crossroads, where we are both Mexican and American. We are also our past and our heritage, as well as our future. You know, we're kind of this in-between bridge place. And I think that's a very powerful place to be. A lot of times people feel very alone, very isolated, or very sort of erased when they're stuck in this in-between, because, you know, I always go back to that scene in Selena where her dad's yelling about, we had to be more Mexican than the Mexicans and more American than the Americans in order to fit in anywhere in this world. And it's very true, because a lot of us feel very much rejected by both our American side that views us as Mexicans and the Mexican side, which very much views us as Americans. So we end up kind of being shoved into the middle. And I wanted to really, really highlight that. And that for a couple of reasons, because first of all, I think that we are a very powerful people being in between. A lot of us don't feel that way growing up, but there is a great deal of power there. As not only just magical power as being kind of a crossroads individual, but also cultural power to kind of unite two different worlds in that way is really important. But also, yeah, I just simply wanted to kind of spotlight people, let them know that they're not alone in this, and also help them reconnect with that side of their heritage that they may have lost. Cool. And then as far as sorry, I forgot the last part of your question.
That's okay. I was gonna say it again.
And now as far as kind of like who's welcome to this book, that is an excellent question. The answer is pretty much everybody. I encourage everybody to pick up this book because, number one, education about different cultures is important. You know, how they work, what is going on over there, because that helps us to filter out misinformation. A lot of times, these practices that are done by cultures of color tend to be greatly misunderstood by kind of the outside world. And then they use those misunderstandings to create more misunderstandings. And then that turns into racism and fear and all of this stuff. And it's pretty much been proven that when people learn more about cultures, and they're less likely to be racist against them. So I think it is important that we educate ourselves on the different types of magic that are out there. It's really important. At the same time too, if we're going to then practice, we then need to have some very honest conversations with ourselves, starting with, you know, why? Why have I chosen to practice this? You know, do I have a good reason beyond simply being drawn to something? You know, I'm drawn to a lot of things that are not good for me. Most of my lactose intolerant friends are really drawn to ice cream, but that doesn't mean that it likes them, right? So we need to kind of actually have reasoning and kind of think about it and understand why we're here. And then once we do that, then we need to look at things like the community. Do we know the community? Are we involved in the community? Are we supporting the community with our votes and the way we spend our money and, you know, how we speak and interact with other people, things like that. And this is stuff that I cover in the first chapter. I have a whole section on, you know, so, you know, you're approaching this magic from outside the community, you know, what are the guidelines? I like to build in some bumpers for this so that people who are, you know, maybe white or something that is not Mexican or Latinx can understand where their place in it is and what's okay and kind of what's not. So I talk about cultural appropriation, ways to avoid it, simple questions to ask yourself. So pretty much anyone should feel very comfortable picking up this book, because I did try to also encompass their experience in it as well.
Awesome. Now I know I learned so much that, you know, I had to filter through that, like, okay, this is what I see either online. Normally it's like random stuff from TikTok. Oh, let me do an egg cleansing. I'm like, doesn't that have a different name? Doesn't that have a different purpose? And then, you know, reading about all of that in your book really gave me a new perspective and further, you know, ways for me to further my own education. Have I done one yet? No, I don't feel comfortable doing one yet, but that's on me, you know? So with the first printing of the book, I have a first edition copy, and I normally what I do is I flip through books and I go to the back and I look for the resources and the bibliography. For some reason, I didn't do that with yours. I was just like, you know, let me just open it and start from the beginning, right? Can you tell us what happened with the first printing of the book? That way, you know, I don't know, again, if other people didn't see the announcement, mm-hmm. they might be like, oh my God, like this really important part of the book is missing. Can you talk about that for a minute, please?
Absolutely. So Wiser, God bless them. They really, really believed in this book, which is wonderful. And they believed in it so much that they, in fact, wanted to put the book out much faster than they normally do. So Wiser normally is a very long process. It's about 18 months from them, you know, accepting your manuscript to you actually having a release date is normally how it is. Mm-hmm. We cut that down by about 6 months and released it in a little under a year, which was quite an ordeal. It means that I didn't get to sit with it as long in the editing process. It meant a lot of stuff. But I was so glad that they were so enthusiastic about this type of work and putting it out there. So that was a big deal to mm-hmm. not only yeah. get a book, but also have them really want it out there so badly that we ended up putting it on speed for it. But what ended up happening was when the first round came out, I was like you, I was so excited. I just kind of opened it up, like read the first page, made sure that like one typo that I really needed them to take out was taken out, and it was, and I was so happy. Everything was good. And then someone sent me a message just like, did you mean to leave out a bibliography in your book? And I'm like, no. What are you talking about? And I go find it. And in the back, there is no bibliography. It wasn't there. And I was like, no. So I'm immediately messaging Wiser. And I'm like, oh no, this thing got left out. I don't know. In some firing of emails to you and other people, because there was like 10 people I'm working on for this book. It just got lost somewhere. And they ended up being able to find it and then add it to the book for the second printing. So mm-hmm. there is a bibliography added. Now, I was really, really sad because at the very end of the book, there is the prayer for the liminal that mm-hmm. that I wrote in, because the book kind of ended very abruptly with the ancestors chapter, and we needed something that was kind of a softer ending for that. Mm-hmm. And the way that it's typeset at the very end, we were pretty sure that we were going to have to chop out that prayer for the liminal in order to make room for the bibliography. And I was really sad about that. But now that I've received the second printing, they were able to actually save the prayer for the liminal. So it's still in there. Yay. Along with the bibliography, which was, I was so happy that they got to keep it in there. So that is in, everything is good. And so people who have the second printings will have the bibliography as well.
Awesome. So if you have the first printing, you've got a special copy, because
you do.
Because it doesn't have edition. One. but I do know that if you email them, they'll send it to you.
Oh, the bibliography?
Yes.
Interesting. I did not know yeah. that. That's great.
A friend of mine emailed them and was able to get a copy. And she's like, hey, just email them and you can get the bibliography. So yeah, if you have the first printing and you want the bibliography, that's been my experience, that they'll give it to you because it's an important part of the book. And I'm glad that you addressed it on Instagram instead of just leaving it like that.
I was like, I promise I'm giving credit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really important part of a book. And it is a bummer that the first printing was like that, but I understand, because it's also super exciting that they were so excited to get your book out there that, you know, a piece got left out. So it was just kind of like a, yay, they're excited, but oh no, something got left out.
We were all too excited about it, but I'd rather be too excited than not excited enough. So that's wonderful to have that support.
Yes, yes. So can you tell us a little bit about the different saints that you have included in this book? Because I noticed that there were some that were more like folk saints, mm-hmm. I think is how you described it. And then some of the more traditional saints. And with my outside perspective on Catholicism and I'm probably going to use the wrong term, but just like Mother Mary, mm-hmm. and different aspects of her, I didn't know that. So that was really interesting to me. But the entire system of like folk saints versus traditional saints, can you talk a little bit about that? Because I find it fascinating.
Absolutely. So it's really funny too, because there is a lot of Catholicism involved in the book, which has kind of scared a few people pretty drastically when they see Catholicism in the book. But we also have to realize too that folk Catholicism is only kind of Catholic in theory. And kind of what I mean by that is a lot of folk Catholicism has kind of to do with, you know, the basics of Catholicism, right? You know, the Bible, Jesus, God, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But then also these people who have been colonized and Christianity has been brought to, they already have a very wide view of the divine and the other side and the spirit world and spirits and things like that. So something like Catholicism seems very narrow. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times mainstream Catholicism will be like, oh, well, the Bible doesn't mention anything about, you know, ghosts. So there's only angels and there's only demons. The Bible also doesn't say anything about like the cactus plant, but we know that it exists, right? The platypus is not mentioned in the Bible, but it very much is real.
Right.
And so that's kind of a folk Catholic perspective. It's like, yeah, that's great, but also there's so much more as well that we then include into it. So that often also means going against the church as an institution as well. So what will happen is we get things that we call folk saints, which are people who lived either exemplary lives or did something very amazing with themselves. And after they died, they continued to provide services or miracles. So an example of a folk saint would be Juan Soldado. So Juan Soldado is a folk saint that is very well known throughout Mexico, that his name literally means Soldier John, because he was a soldier in the military. He was framed for the death of a young girl who was murdered, and he ended up being killed for it. This is a huge kind of Cliff Notes version of the story, but they ended up not really wanting to put together a formal firing squad. So they basically said, how about you run? And if you get away, you get away. And he definitely didn't. He just ran and they shot him. Mm-hmm. Well, the place where he had died, they tried to clean up the blood, but it kept reappearing. And so then they kept trying to clean it up again, and then it would come back again. And so people started to pile up rocks there as kind of a memorial to him. And then later they started kind of going to where his grave was, and they would ask him for things like help with the making enough money to pay rent, or to help somebody who was suffering from an addiction issue, or, you know, pretty much anything. And he would provide from mm-hmm. the afterlife these things. But the thing is that when you were from the Catholic Church's perspective, in order to be a saint, you had to be very Catholic and very holy and very pious and things like that, which a lot of these folk saints weren't necessarily mm-hmm. like, you know, perfect examples of good Catholics. And so they don't like to add them to the list of saints, but the people don't really care and add them anyway, with or without the church's consent. And mm-hmm. that's how we get something that we call a folk saint, which is like, you know what, this person was great, they did a lot of good things in life, or there was one reason or another why we feel this person was exemplary or holy in their own way, even if they weren't necessarily a pillar of the Catholic community, and we're going to work with them in the same manner, versus a saint who is someone who is, you know, canonized by the church, you know, made very official. Mm-hmm. These ones are kind of the non-official saints, but are very important to our culture and our work.
That's really fascinating, especially because I worship and honor Brigid, an Irish goddess, but also a saint for the Irish Catholic Church, but she is not canonized with the Catholic Church. So it was interesting to see some of the correlations between the folk saints that you mention in the book and how Brigid is worshipped or honored with Catholics and pagans alike. Mm-hmm. And there are even some instances in your book, especially I noticed when you're talking about protection. One thing that really stuck out to me is there's a lot of correlation that I'm finding just based on your book and the research that I've done. This is, you know, correlation does not equal causation. There's no real connection that I have found. But like the scissors and the iron, mm-hmm. because they're very protective in your practice, but they're also seen as very protective in Irish practices. To keep the she away and keep them from stealing your babies and replacing them with changelings, they would have an open pair of scissors by the crib, or better yet, an open Bible with an open pair of scissors under the baby's crib. And it was really interesting to see those correlations. What is one practice that you really enjoy as far as like the protections go, or what is one that is like a go-to for you?
Oh gosh, there's so many of them. I do absolutely adore the use of scissors. And one of the uses of them that I give, one of the hechizos or kind of the spells that I give in it, was actually given to me by my friend Rosie, who is thanked in the book. And it was from her mother who taught it to her, and her mother was from Guanajuato. And so it's her mother's prayer. But essentially what you do is you take a pair of scissors, I of course have a pair here, and you set them open in the window, and you say a prayer that translates, it always sounds kind of funny in English, but it translates to Saint Benedict comes, Saint Benedict goes, Saint mm-hmm. Benedict grab that witch that comes flying is how it translates. But essentially you are creating a barrier against witches or their magic being able to come into your home this way. And in Mexican culture, we realize too that like brujas aren't just like people who are connected with the earth and are healers and like crystal people. That's not brujas in Mexico. In Mexico, brujas are almost like mythical creatures that fly through the trees at night and like will fly in through like your chimney or through your window or things mm-hmm. like that. So putting some sort of protection like that in the window helps to prevent them from kind of entering or causing any mischief. And when she told me about this, it was, I just thought it was a really beautiful, but also very simple spell to do. And so I loved being able to incorporate that into the book.
Do I have scissors up here? I don't actually have scissors up here, but as a crafter and, you know, I sew and I crochet, and I've got scissors everywhere. I've even cleaned out old bags and stuff. Oh, that's where that pair of scissors went. Oh, I was looking for that pair of scissors. And I love how a lot of folk practices like that, they are so simple. Mm-hmm. And it really breaks down the misconception that everything has to be complicated. You have to have a circle. You've got to have 10 different herbs from 10 different very hard to get to places. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to burn 50 different candles.
Yeah.
This is why I really enjoy the folk practices more than ritual, I guess. I mean, ritual has its place, of course. But it makes it very easy to connect with and very easy to get started. Would you recommend your book for beginners, or would you say that it is for someone who maybe already has a little bit of a foundation of their own practice and beliefs?
My book is definitely beginner friendly. I wanted to, and it's funny because a lot of the feedback I've gotten about the book is people being either really excited or very frustrated that it's a very long book. It's pretty much the largest length that Wiser would allow me to have it. I think they gave me a 65,000 word count, and I gave them a 64,998 word manuscript because I wanted to put as much into it as I could. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of start off by kind of explaining the culture, and then I kind of go into the basics of some of the tools that we use. And then we go through the spirits, and then the kind of the bulk of the end section is all the spells. And in there, we start from the very beginning. Like, if you've never cast a spell before, mm-hmm. here's how we're gonna do it. I take you through the art of spell casting, where we talk about magical timing, connecting with the divine, building altars, forming intention, all this stuff is built into the book. So if you have never cast a spell in your life, this is gonna still be a great book for you. It's gonna work, it's gonna walk you through it. What I really, really wanted to do was write the book in a way that if people only had access to one book, that it would get them through from starting to 20 years from now, still looking at the same book, getting new information, or at least having the foundations from that book to move forward on their own as well. So that was very important to me.
Awesome. Well, I mean, you basically just answered my next question, which was, what was your main goal with this book?
Absolutely. It was to really, really get the education out there. I wanted people to feel very comfortable in this work once they finished the book. So there were even things that I really didn't necessarily want to add at first that I ended up adding. Things like there's a whole section on crafting your own magical oils. Mm-hmm. And that was something I originally wasn't going to add. But I'm like, you know what? There is a young bruja or brujo somewhere that is going to need this information. Yeah. And that was me kind of giving away some of my secrets, but also this book was much more important than me and my secrets. It's mm-hmm. more about my community. And so I would rather give away too much than not enough and have yes. somebody need it.
Yeah, that's really important. I'm really glad that you mentioned the community aspect of it, because that's really important. And I feel like, you know, yeah, some stuff we can keep for ourselves, but there is some stuff too that would benefit the community. Mm-hmm. What are some steps that someone like me outside of the community could or should take if I am to use any of the spells or any of the practices in your book? Do you have any advice for someone like me on the outside?
Absolutely. So the first thing that you need to examine is, you know, your relationship with Mexican people. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm always saying this quote from Queen Co of Conjure South. She says, you can't practice folk magic if you don't know the folk. That's important. You need to get to know the people in the community, mm-hmm. and then examine your relationship with them. You know, are you, you know, trying to use this magic, but you're also voting in a manner that's really harmful to the Mexican American community, or the Mexican community in general? Are you trying to use this magic while also being racist towards that community, mm-hmm. or, you know, things like that? Those two things cannot happen simultaneously. We cannot reject the folk while practicing the folk magic. Right. That's not how any of it works. And then beyond that, then we need to kind of get in touch with, you know, is what we're doing cultural appropriation? And nowadays on the internet, literally everything is cultural appropriation. I have people calling me like, I'm so sad, I can't have margaritas anymore because they're from Mexico. And I'm like, no, that's not how this works. Like, you can have a margarita, it's totally fine. Mm-hmm. So I break it down in the book to ask yourself three questions, right? Like, you know, if you're using this magic, ask yourself, is this making me money? And if the answer is yes, then you are doing cultural appropriation. It's very common for people to pick up a book like mine, read the chapter on limpias, and then open a whole shop doing limpias for people, charging $600 to shake a sage stick at them. And that's a huge problem because not only are you profiting hugely off of something that you don't actually understand, but you are also pricing out of the people who brought it to you. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot of Latinos who could just throw down $600 for a half-ass limpia. Like, that's not something yeah. that we can do. The second question is, are you taking up space? You know, it's something, you know, as a Native American that we run into a lot is we go to try and practice some of our sacred ceremonies, things like a sweat lodge, and you show up and you are the only Native American person there, including the person leading the sweatshop, which makes you feel very displaced within your own culture. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's how much space are you taking up in this community that isn't necessarily your own? You know, are you taking speaking engagements away from people who should be of that community speaking? Are you writing books when you're not of that community? Things like that. Those are all opportunities and spaces that should be open for people from the community. Now you can attend those speeches, you can attend those, you know, places, but not necessarily taking up the opportunities. Mm-hmm. And the last one that I have people ask themselves is, am I erasing culture? And this happens a lot when people want to make themselves more comfortable in a space that doesn't necessarily belong to them. So people like to do things like they like to pick up one of our spirits, say like La Santa Muerte. They'll pick her up and then be like, oh, well, I'm uncomfortable with this whole like her being deaf thing. So I'm just going to kind of erase all of that. And she's now just my mother and she's like not at all scary or anything like that. They just erase all of that to make it much more palatable. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes an issue as well. They like a lot of times once people from outside the community join one, they like to try and change it. And so that's something that we need to be very aware of. So those are just three very simple questions. Just, am I making money? Am I taking up space? Am I erasing culture? And if you can honestly answer no to all of those, you're pretty good.
Awesome. That's good advice. I mean, it's something that I, you know, even I think about in being online, and it gives me something to think about when going through your book and trying to figure out, okay, which one do I want to try today? Do I want to do one today? Do I want to try something, or am I just going to take in the knowledge and leave it alone? Cause it's not necessarily for me. Like it can be for me, but that's hard for me to explain where my thought process is there.
Yeah.
I mean, I know
I think that it's okay to use. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's okay to use as, you know, as long as we're not claiming it, as long as we're not trying to be the face of it, you know, say, you know, this is my practice, this is where I come from, things like that. That's when we have problems. Mm-hmm. So it's like I always tell people too, like, you know, say something happened, right? You know, your friend comes in carrying your other friend who was messing around in a cemetery and stepped on something that looked like it might have been like a hex doll or something, and now they can't stay conscious and they've broken out in hives and stuff, you know, and you have my book sitting there and you know how to do an egg cleansing. Do I want you to look at him and go, well, that sucks, can't help you, because if I did, it would be cultural appropriation? No, I want you to go get an egg and help your friend. Like, and it's going to be okay. Like, the world mm-hmm. isn't going to end. But if you then do that, and then once you're done, start calling yourself a bruja or a curandera and, you know, wearing a, you know, a head wrap and smoking cigars and stuff, then we have a problem. Right.
That's a good distinction. So besides the book, you just recently started a podcast, right? With, I'm going to get their handle wrong. Is it Archaic Honey?
Yeah.
Oh, did I get it right?
Mm-hmm. She's at Archaic Honey on Instagram.
There we go.
And she's Britton Boyd in real life.
There we go. Can you tell us a little bit about your podcast? I've listened to a couple episodes, but I'm trying to make space for everything else that I need to catch up on too.
I know how that goes. Yes, I am so blessed to do this podcast with Britton. She is the best podcast co-host that I could ever ask for. She does so much, pretty much all the behind the scenes stuff, from, you know, building the coven that you can join to our website, all of that stuff is her. She handles all the tech and it's absolutely amazing. She approached me about this about a year ago and was like, is this something you'd be interested in doing? And I'm like, of course I would. And her and I mesh really well because we are, we're both folk witches, so we're very much into that kind of dirty, like ditch witchery, you know, sort of thing. You know, it's all kind of like, I have a tin can and a chicken foot. What are we going to do with this sort of a thing? Right. We're not very ceremonial. We're not very reverent about it. And both of us have been doing this for a long time. And neither one of us are really into what's happening with the sort of mainstream trends with witchcraft and all this stuff, where now glitter is an active ingredient in everything. You know, we're kind of anti a lot of that, which means that our podcast is a bit of a balancing voice for a lot of the witchcraft community. We like to strip away a lot of the kind of fluffy Instagram magic and really kind of get down to brass tacks. You know, what is it that we're actually doing here? What is witchcraft? How do we do this? You know, what is below all the crystals and the aesthetic of it all? You know, what is the real stuff? We like to really get into that, which is important. We also get into some weird stuff. We released an episode about people who aren't people. And that episode freaked out a lot of people. I'm getting messages from a lot of folks that are like, so listen to this at night and I'm now forever traumatized. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. So we do kind of branch out occasionally. We have great guests on. We have interviewed Anwen Avalon and Temperance Alden. And we have a few more exciting ones coming out. We have Corey Hutchison from New World Witchery coming as well. All kinds of folks.
And what's the name of your podcast?
Oh, yes, that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
The podcast is called Invoking Witchcraft, and you can find us on the Instagram and pretty much everywhere that podcasts are found.
Yes, I am determined to catch up on all of those episodes. And now that I know that episode is kind of creepy, maybe I'll listen to it in the morning when I'm cleaning my kitchen.
That's a great time to listen to it. Definitely don't listen to it at night. I had people who were like, yeah, I was like driving at night through the woods when I was listening to your podcast. I'm like, don't do that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So I had another question pop into my head while we were talking about this. And as someone who identifies as a pagan and follows a specific pagan path, are the two practices, like, can they go together? The practices from your book, and then someone like me who practices more of like eclectic witchcraft and Irish focused Celtic paganism. Can they blend together?
Can they? Yes, but there's a caveat to that. And I talk about this briefly in the book, where people see Catholicism and then they immediately kind of freak out a little bit.
Right.
And so then they want to go, well, I'm going to take out the Catholicism and replace it with neo-paganism, which is like, okay, if you want to do that, then that's fine. But as soon as you do that, it is no longer Brujeria or American Brujeria. It is no longer the same thing at all. And to be honest, if you take the Catholicism out of this work, you're left with some candles. And that's pretty much it, like, because so much of this work is influenced by Catholicism. It's an interesting sort of thing, because very much like we as Mexican Americans are in between, so is our magic, where if pagans looking at it, they're like, oh my gosh, this is strict Catholicism. Yet Catholics look at it and they're like, oh my gosh, this is witchcraft, get it away from me. So we are kind of rejected on all sides once again with our magic, because it is like us quite a bit. There's a lot of nuance to understanding the Catholicism in it, because it's definitely not the same as our mainstream Catholicism that we know in the United States. It's very different. It's a lot spookier. And it is a lot more pagan than people realize once you actually get into it. But Catholicism really lends itself to that, with all the saints and with Mary. It kind of very much creates a sort of polytheistic, goddess-centric sort of version of Catholicism for us, which is really, really helpful. And we're not as different as a lot of people like to think we are.
I guess what I kind of meant by that question, I don't think I explained it very well. Not necessarily can you like blend them together, but can they be done side by side? Okay. I think that's more along the lines of where I was going with that. Not necessarily like I'm going to take Mary out of here and I'm going to plug in Bridget. Like that's, yeah. We're not doing that. But absolutely. They can be side by side, typically.
Yeah. And that's okay. How I kind of actually started. I freaked out so many people on Instagram because for a long time, my altar on one side was Hecate. And on the other side was Jesus and the Holy Spirit. And a lot of people are like, you can't do that. Like, that's terrible. And I'm like, but everyone seems to be really fine with it. And I stayed that way for about a year as I was trying to figure out what the heck am I doing here? Mm-hmm. And it was so funny because, you know, Hecate was the one who kind of like took me by the hand and brought me back over to Catholicism where I grew up. And I'm like, are you serious? And she's like, yes. So you can kind of do them side by side. As long as you have a belief and understanding of both, you know, it's very hard to be like, well, everything about Catholicism is completely wrong, and then pray to a saint, mm-hmm. you know, like you have to kind of be able to make peace with both of them at the same time. And if you're able to, I absolutely think you can.
Okay. Awesome. That
it's a lot I to hold in your brain at once.
Yeah, no, it for sure. It can be, yeah. But I'm really glad that you cleared that part up, that they can be done side by side together for anybody that sort of wants to maybe dip their toes into it and feel it out, that it's okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yes. Yes. Just because you put some limes on some salt does not mean that you have to throw out all your pagan statues and become a Catholic forever. Like, yeah, there is definitely, we can kind of flip between the worlds a little bit.
Awesome. We are coming up on at least, I think, 45 minutes. So do you want to give a shout out to all of your socials? Anywhere else that you can be found online? Like, do you have a blog? Do you have a shop?
Yeah.
The floor is yours.
So all of that can be found through my Instagram. My Instagram handle is @OregonWoodWitch with little underscores in between the words. Mm-hmm. That is a great place to keep up to date with everything that I'm doing. You get to see what I'm posting, what I'm up to. And that's also the place as well where you can get to my Etsy shop where I'm currently selling signed copies of the book, as well as some oils and some charms and things like that I put up there every so often. That's also how you can get to my Patheos column is through my Instagram, and that's where you can read my blog posts. And you can also book services with me there as well. So I am a full-time witch, which means you can hire me for spell services, for tarot readings, for consultations, coaching, all kinds of things through there. All of that is through the link in my bio on my Instagram. So you can come and hang out with me there. That's also where I post when I'm holding workshops as well.
Awesome. And I will leave the link to your Instagram and everything else that I can find. For those watching on YouTube, it'll be in the description. Podcast listeners, it will be in the show notes. Before we say goodbye, do you have anything else that you want to add? Maybe we didn't touch on final words, I guess, or did we cover pretty much like everything?
We pretty much covered everything. I will say, however, that if you're listening to this and you are a person of mixed race who feels very alone or kind of stuck in between two things that you don't really fit into, know that you're not alone. There's actually a lot of us who are exactly where you are. You are in good company. You have family and people who understand you out in the world. And that is a huge part of what this book is about. So if you are feeling lonely, know that we are here among you.
Perfect. So thank you so much for being here, Jay, and for talking with me about your book and your practices and really clearing up some of the misconceptions. I think we cleared some of those up. Definitely everybody go check out the links in the description and in the show notes. Follow Jay on Instagram. I know that I fangirled a little bit when you followed me back on Instagram. I was like, oh my God. It was one of those things. But yes, I love your Instagram and all of the resources that you provide. I think you are an invaluable resource to most of us here in the community, and everybody would do well to follow along and see what you have to share.
Thank you. So, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess until next time, everybody. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed listening to our chat today. Be sure to check the show notes where you can find links to all things J. Allen Cross. And until next time, everyone, stay magical.